Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hi, and welcome to Pattern Portraits, an artwork and podcast by me, Lauren Godfrey. Each episode, I speak with a fellow pattern lover in the creative industries about their relationship to pattern and colour, and how surrounding themselves with pattern serves as a kind of armour. Each guest has selected some textiles special to them, which we will discuss, using the patterns to delve into their stories. I've also created an accompanying artwork, an abstract pattern portrait of the sitter through their patterns made from jesmonite inlaid with perspex and brass, and a resulting print will be available to purchase. There'll be an exhibition of all the artworks, and the prints are available on my website, laurengodfrey.co.uk. Follow Lauren Godfrey Studio and Pattern Portraits Podcast on Instagram to stay in the loop. Today I'm speaking with Julie Verhoeven, an artist who defies categorisation. Once met, never forgotten, she's a unique force in the art and fashion world, having inspired countless students in her role as a tutor in fashion at Central St Martin's, a post she's held for 26 years. She's collaborated with many fashion brands, including Chloe, Marc Jacobs, Louis Vuitton and Mulberry, and rose to prominence in the noughties with fashion illustration, kind of Egon Schiele meets Francis Bacon, if they were both drawing Twiggy. Julie and I first met about 10 years ago when I was assisting the artist Anthea Hamilton, who collaborated with Julie on an exhibition at Cult Space Palesh Empire. Days spent stuffing wadding into oversized fried egg cushions bonded us. Julie, welcome to Pattern Portraits.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
So I guess I want to start with asking you about what pattern means to you.
Yeah, pattern, it's life-giving, and I just like that it feels like noise, so I'm really happy to be surrounded with this, noise and sort of like chaos, and I feel like it's always pulsating, so it reminds me that I'm alive, and that feels good.
Wow, that's really nice. I've never thought about it like that. But that really hits the nail on the head of something about it, kind of, it interrupts the silence or something. Or like,
yeah,
I find sometimes when I wear something very, very plain, or if I have to wear a uniform for a job or something, it feels like you're being kind of squashed and silenced. And so it's interesting, the idea of like it's sort of almost like you're announcing your presence, or the kind of
not in a show-offy way,
no,
but maybe I don't intend to be a show-off, but I don't want to miss that opportunity of, and I don't want to appear bland. It's this fear of being bland and uninteresting. That's the answer, I think, is pattern.
Yeah, no, I totally know what you mean. I think it somehow is a kind of stand-in for words that might not
get said, and then you have the opportunity sometimes to not have to speak or can be able to sit back.
Yeah, it's nice. It works both ways, doesn't it? Sometimes it really alienates you from people, which is kind of okay as well. Sometimes when I can't be bothered to talk, which is really rude. There's this like barrier, but in other ways you find connections. You know, it works both ways. It's lovely. Just pleasing on the eye, I always find.
Yeah. I love your outfit today, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
I'm going to describe it if I can. It's a kind of caftan, would we call it? With amazing sort of mirrored motif of an Egyptian goddess, maybe, sort of Nefertiti, which is studded with sequins, and there's gold lamé and a kind of neck piece which has been amplified by an amazing beaded necklace which says Julie Verhoeven.
So tragic.
Is it? Well, in case we forget.
In case I get lost.
Please return to. So maybe we can start with talking about your first fabric, which is this jacket. Let's describe it. It's got it's kind of a patchwork, but quite a kind of intentional patchwork. So whoever's made it. Do we know who's made it?
Yeah, there's a lovely label inside.
Oh, and wow.
Yeah, I'm ashamed to say I hadn't even bothered to Google her until this morning.
Oh, yeah. Collection Judith Roberts, Hesho en Mexico. Okay, so it's made in Mexico, but Judith Roberts maybe doesn't sound Mexican.
Yeah, she's American.
Okay.
And, then I went online. There's an extensive selection of, like, sort of 1980s patchworks. Amazing. I think it might be a bit later than that even, but, yeah. No, it's an old favourite.
Where did it come from? What's its story?
I don't really remember, other than, which isn't very helpful.
No, that's all right. All the best clothes come to you in a moment.
Well, when I was going through the choices, I realised, there was a moment when I was a prolific secondhand shopper, clothes shopper, and that was partly because I was paid to do that when I had like consultancy fashion jobs.
Okay.
Yeah, and so the majority of them I bought, I would say, about 20, 25 years ago, and that was definitely one of the earlier pieces.
So you were paid to buy secondhand clothes on behalf of a job, but then you would like have a little swipey on the side.
Yeah, well, I always ended up getting distracted and buying stuff for myself.
Yeah.
And that one, like I say, I've had it for years, but it's never really had its moment.
Yeah.
And it's actually a tiny bit too tight across the bust.
Okay.
But now it's even tighter.
It can sit open.
Yeah.
I did find a really nice picture of you in this, actually.
I think that's the only time it's come out, actually.
Okay. Well, it's its second moment. It's having
It's due to come out again, but I need to breathe in.
I also want to know more about the job that you had hunting for secondhand clothes. Where were you working then?
That would have been for French designer Martine Sitbon. That
okay.
was in the 90s. So I was I worked for her in-house as a design assistant in the mid-90s, and then I left and I stayed on as a freelancer.
Okay.
So I did that for about 7 years, so I'll be back and forth two or three times a season bringing research ideas. And that was, it was much easier for shopping in London for vintage stuff at that time.
Oh, right. That's interesting. Because there's kind of quite a buzz around like the Parisian flea markets and sort of flea markets in kind of the south of France and stuff. But I guess the style that you get in those is quite workwear or like sort of lace, like negligees and things, but not so much like the kind of the more 80s vintage as we know it.
I don't know. Martine, she's very into like rock and roll and punk and new wave, post-punk. Not that that jacket's I don't think that was for her. That was I just bought it for myself. So obviously London was ideal for finding crummy old shit.
Nice. Do you still do that? Do you, like, for yourself, are you a hunter in the vintage shops, or are they?
No, I've sort of banned myself from going in. I mean, okay. I occasionally pop in now when I'm feeling naughty, but it's out of control.
Right.
So I've had to sort of stop.
Okay.
Because I pass, going to my studio, I can't pass 4 charity shops every day.
Okay.
So, yeah. So I'm doing quite well.
Yeah.
Put the blinkers on. Try and resist.
Yeah.
Because it is out of control now.
Mm-hmm.
On eBay, I used to always just be tapping in, just put novelty in front of any word.
Ah, top tip. I like that.
So you'd get some real, like, interesting horrors.
Nice.
It used to be quite good fun, entertaining.
I think online shopping, and I don't have the knack, is all about language,
mm-hmm.
and about the words that either it's known that things are referred to as, or it's sort of an accidental, as you say, with something like novelty, kind of finding a groove that you can kind of, yeah, like a keyword.
Mm.
And I find it really difficult because I don't know, I don't have the lingo. But I find if you put pattern, for example, it's a bit, there's a bit of a kind of sea of
polka dot.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Mm. Curse the polka dot. So you worked with Martine Sitbon, and was it before that that you were with John Galliano? Can you tell us about that?
So I worked for him when he was in London in the late 80s. And so I went on a student placement. I was 18, and I hadn't got a college. I'd applied to do a BA fashion and didn't get in. So I ended up staying there, and it developed into an employment,
nice.
Gameful employment.
Blessing in disguise.
Yeah, no, it was a blessing.
Yeah.
And and it was fabulous. He was based in Covent Garden at that time.
Okay. And what were you doing there?
Mainly making cappuccino. And then I started off hand sewing these rose jacket things. It was his Rose collection. That was 1987,
okay.
Off 6 or something. And so I started hand sewing, and then I moved to assisting on the cutting table. And then eventually wormed my way into assisting him on, like, research trips, and then drawing any sort of artwork that needed.
Nice. Okay, so is that where the kind of illustration grew from, or were you doing that before then?
I was always drawing girls.
Mm.
And I was going to drawing classes always, mm-hmm. Howard Tangi drawing classes.
Were they life drawing classes?
They were mainly fashioned, clothed, but I was going to life drawing as well.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to both. And and then John's really into drawing. He draws fabulously himself. So he was really supportive, and he paid for me to go to extra classes and stuff.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so
that's
really nice. Yeah, so just like drawing women, in fashion.
Mm.
But so I didn't really, my design education had just been like a fashion diploma. So it was pretty basic.
Mm-hmm.
So, so I felt like I learnt everything on the job.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot to be said about kind of apprenticeship or a employment as a proxy for education. I think I graduated and ended up, I did a BA in fine art, and then ended up getting a job working for Anthea Hamilton, and at the time I was always like, maybe I'll do an MA at some point, but to be honest, it was kind of just an incredible experience to be there and learning and doing and observing and drinking it in. And actually that was probably far more beneficial for me at that point in time than doing a master's. And so I think, yeah, it's sort of exposure to a particular environment, and especially if the person that you're with is someone who's generous and supportive and values your own creativity rather than trying to suck you dry. Which I think, well, Anthea certainly was, and it sounds like to an extent John Galliano was as well for you.
Oh, super generous. You're just sort of thrown in, and it was just good fun above anything else.
Perhaps we could talk about another of the fabrics, maybe this monochrome-y dress. It's much more navy than I knew. So I sort of described it as having a Peter Pan collar, but it's also it's like a double layer of collar. And it's like it is monochrome, but it's navy blue and white with a kind of large spot and then lots of little, they're almost like petals or...
Yeah, it's an odd one. I just really love the print. I like the way that it's so graphic, but it's not black and white. And I like the discs, like a take on a polka dot, but not. And then I like the brush strokes pretending to be like a animal.
It has got a kind of furry. Furry quality.
And then I just like the surprise element of the self colour at the back, navy. It just works really well proportionally, I think.
Yeah. And also like the pleats and how that contributes to the way that you read the pattern is a really nice thing, I think.
Yeah, totally.
It's something that I really enjoyed when I'm drawing from pattern, is that kind of moment where the pattern gets distorted or kind of goes around a corner or sort of stretches or is abstracted to a point where you kind of can't read the intended pattern anymore. But that's what's so nice about the fluidity of fabric, and that it's not just like a stiff surface.
It's lovely. I just love fabric in movement.
There's something in this that makes me think it looks like a kind of child's outfit, like it's sort of I don't know, it's got a childlike proportions, and I'm curious about how you dressed as a child and what your kind of creative expression was then, and when your visual identity sort of grew.
It's cute that you think of it like that, because it's a bit like a dolly paper dress type thing. It's a collar, isn't it?
And the sort of the flow from the chest, it's not kind of cinched at the waist, it's not kind of trying to do like sexy adult lady. It's like little innocent girl.
Cute. As a child, I don't remember what I wore. I remember my hair, this haircut, which was, my mum did one of those basin jobbies, so
literally with the basin with the bowl on your head.
No, I don't, that would be cruel, wouldn't it? I don't remember much other than having that haircut and being unhappy that I had to have that haircut because it was so boyish. And then there's one photo which it just sticks in my memory because I must have been about five, and I was wearing a black velvet trouser suit.
Wow.
And it was my parents had friends who had children that were slightly older than us, and so we had their hand-me-downs, and this was Amelia's velvet suit. I like the photo because it's quite funny, but that's, other than that, I don't remember what I wore. No idea.
Was it for a special occasion, or was that just a general outfit on a day-to-day basis?
I'm just in the garden looking like a traffic light sign. I was making like a waving sort of thing. I don't know, it's very weird that I don't remember. I remember I had a poncho, I remember that, which was because I made that into hair.
What do you mean you made it into hair?
I pulled it over my head and then I had lots of long hair.
Okay, nice.
Which was better. Yeah, but as soon as it kicked in, you know, about eight, when I started to be into fashion, then it was like, silly clothes from then on. From then on in.
When did you kind of begin to make your own selections that weren't hand-me-downs or...
Mm. So I think as soon as school discos kicked in, didn't they? Mm-hmm. Sort of 12-ish. Yeah, so it was mainly my hair and my makeup that was probably started to get the most disturbing.
Okay.
Certainly for school. They weren't happy about it.
Okay. What was teenage Julie doing?
Makeup too soon.
Okay.
And not enhancing makeup, but fluorescence.
Right.
Again. White face, which has continued.
Uh-huh.
Because I had really bad acne. I've still got bad acne. And so I started... It's quite sad, really, because I was thinking about the makeup. It's actually because I was trying to, like, hide my skin. Mm. And then once I started buying my ID magazine and The Face, so then it was when I realised I need to do something about my hair.
Okay.
So any pocket money, all my earnings, my Saturday work jobs were spent on trying to change the appearance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And was that sort of trying to escape a norm, or was it just like it was just the area that you could express yourself and align with
I don't know, I didn't really think about it. I was just like, that's what I was doing. There was no alternative. That was just it. And I remember, I do always remember, you know, how people say, oh, she'll grow out of it. You know, she's just a teenager. Yeah. Well, I thought, you want a bet? I've only just started. You know, because you do see with some children, you think, oh, it's a phase. Mm. But even then, I was thinking, no.
That's nice. I like that. You're like, this is it. This is me for good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it'd be nice to talk about clothes as empowerment and how they make you feel, and if there's something particular or sort of more general that you're bolstering. In a way, you sort of touched on it with the makeup covering up skin.
Yeah.
I wonder how kind of expressing yourself through clothes has sort of helped along the way.
Yeah. A lot of the time that I wear clothes that have a lot of volume and coverage and pattern is because I kind of want to obliterate my body. Mm. Because they're just, like, as we all have issues, I don't like it. I just want to, like, so engulf it.
Mm.
And then by doing that, I also kind of feel it's in a very gentle way. I feel like it's an act of protest. Mm-hmm. I don't want to, like, succumb to those sort of, not that I ever could, but those sort of female stereotypes. Even though I am sort of uber feminine, but I'm sort of not. It's sort of, yeah, so it's all, it's for me, it's very layered. It's sort of, well, it is for most people, but I kind of get pleasure with being a little bit provocative but not in the obvious sense.
Yeah.
I feel.
Yeah.
And it really sort of amuses me how colour, pattern, cloth, you know, how you can really sort of, you can really distort people's perceptions of you.
Mm.
It's just, I find it fascinating and quite fabulous.
It's very powerful. Yeah,
and all the sort of pop pop culture references, which I love. You know, I kind of, and that includes my sort of hairdos. I feel like I'm enjoying myself with that as well. And I'm not wanting to be smug, but it's that thing, you either, some people just like, oh no, who's that nutter over there? And other people, like, really get it, you know? So it's nice, because then you sort of, you can fast track through life a bit quicker, because then you only really need to, like, engage with people that are interested in you.
Yeah. Right.
That's so horrible thing to say.
I mean it's horrible if you think about it in one way, but also there's something kind of, I suppose it's what we're all doing. I mean, it's what people do when they wear a band t-shirt or they wear like a signal of a taste that they want to kind of portray into the world. And I guess through that, they're saying, I like the Rolling Stones. If you like the Rolling Stones too, maybe you'll come and speak to me.
Yeah.
And then it's interesting. I think it starts from quite an early age, like my kid who's six, he wears like a Spider-Man top or a Sonic top.
Mm.
And the amount of conversations it starts with other six-year-olds who are like, I love Sonic. Mm. And then you're in. And actually observing it from that point of view, it's something quite beautiful is that we do as humans, like kind of birds peacocking somehow to be like, this is my taste. These are the bands I like. These are the things that I'm interested in. And come and join me if you're into it too.
Yeah.
And I wonder whether that for you in a more complicated way, perhaps, or in a more exciting way than a band t-shirt, you're giving that signal.
That's really nice. Yeah. Well, I hope I'm sort of playing with those sort of ideas. I mean, I love art and fashion just on the purely like communication tool this is, you know, like on a really base level. I just love the way that, you know, I would hope that any work that I do isn't sort of ignored, that it has some sort of resonance with someone. You know, if that's just one person, that's fine. I'm happy, you know. And that's the same in life, isn't it? Like how many friends can you really have?
Yeah.
Practically.
Yeah.
So, and then taste, you know, I forgot about that word, taste. Yeah, I love good and bad taste or whatever that is.
Mm.
Yeah, that really excites me. I don't know. People are so strange. It's so sort of unforgiving of other people's foibles.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, I just try and be open as I can be. Not judge, I think, non-judgmental, especially with wardrobe and clothes. People are like, oh my god, they're like so judgmental.
Yeah.
Shocking.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Can we talk a bit about the relationship between sort of costume and fashion, and thinking about some of the work that you've done in recent years, where you've made uniform or costume for characters, usually you but sometimes other people. For example, the bathrooms at Frieze in 2016, where you and Valeria Napoleoni and maybe other people as well dressed in maybe you can explain what you dressed in, actually.
So I was on site for the duration of the fair, dressed as my version of a toilet attendant. And then my friend Joshua Beattie, he was with me for the duration as well. And we took turns in manning the two toilets, booths.
Okay.
Banks. And then Valeria, she came on... one of the nights and we did a performance of sorts.
Okay.
Yeah, dressed as an attendant. Yeah, and then I just... So when I first got the commission, I was like, oh, workwear. So I was doing my workwear research. And then I was thinking, no, this is sort of too easy. And actually what I'm more interested in is how people respond to a toilet attendant. And I didn't want them to be sort of invisible, but equally I didn't want to go too silly. I also really like tabards.
Mm.
I love
a tabard.
Just love the word.
Yeah. Yes, the word alone. It's a great word.
So I started off, I thought, oh, that'll work. Yeah, tabard. And then that was Joshua, he embroidered the tabard.
They're also very easy to make when it comes to like making something yourself. It's sort of just folded thing with a hole in the head, right?
Yes, exactly. And one size fits all.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking about the whole sort of services role, and which took me to being subservient, and then it got me into the world of fetish very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So then I felt that there needed to be some black vinyl involved.
And okay.
And then I thought, oh, that'd be quite funny because it's wipeable.
Yes.
And then I had clear pockets so you could see the free tampons to give away. And then I had a black vinyl giant bonnet, which was worn over a yellow hard hat. And then I thought the bonnet was sort of like Holly Hobby from the 1970s, this sort of wholesome, homely, sort of mummy's bonnet.
Yeah.
Stroke giant baby.
Yeah.
And then over the hard hat, which obviously protection, blah blah blah. Anyway, so yeah, it was fun.
And the giant baby carried through to your recent show at Quench in Margate. Can you tell us about the costume for that
role? Oh yeah. So then I suppose it was a sort of continuation of sorts. I wanted to invigilate at my own exhibition on a Saturday, part-time. So I thought I needed to supply and vigilator's outfit for all. Yeah, so I just said, what's the most ugliest universal thing that you can buy? And I thought that was a fleece. They're just so horrible. They make everybody look horrendous.
There's something very textually cringe-worthy about a fleece, and I don't know if everybody has it or not, but when a fleece gets wet... That sort of really grinds my teeth.
I get that. Yeah, nasty things. So I got one of those. Then an elderly pair of slippers, which were super comfy for the duration. And then what else? Oh, yeah, then there was a bonnet. Yeah, crocheted. Again, Joshua Beattie made the crocheted bonnet that had a sort of teat on the top.
Oh,
so
I missed that in the photos.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like a lemon. So it had a lemon teat. Say that again. Teat.
Teats and tabards.
So it's a sort of humiliated outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which worked well if you were invigilating in the adult high chair.
I'm interested in this idea of humiliation in clothing. Can you talk a bit more about that?
Yeah, ooh, I don't know. Yeah, I just like the other extreme of everybody trying going out of their way to look as conventionally sexy as they think is the way forward. And I just, what's the opposite of that?
Mm-hmm.
And why should it be so embarrassing and humiliating? Silly, really, it's just clothes, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's all this sort of baggage that comes with them.
Yeah, and I guess... The humiliation or perceived humiliation of a certain role, perhaps, in society, a toilet attendant or an invigilator, perhaps, or somebody who's providing a service, and that as a kind of embodiment of this particular humiliation. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, again, I suppose it's that thing of being visible or not. It drives me nuts when people don't acknowledge invigilators at galleries or museums. You know, it's the most boring job on the planet, and you could at least like acknowledge their existence, you know. And obviously the same for a toilet attendant.
Absolutely.
You know.
Let's talk about the gold lamé flower jobby.
Yes.
Can you describe this one for us?
Yeah, so it's a shirt stroke blouse, I suppose, but it's in a nicer dry sort of cotton.
Mm.
And then it's got large sort of, yeah, giant bloom head in its in a sort of muted gold. It's really nice. I've had this for years and years. And I, again, it's a tricky one to wear. It doesn't have any, must be homemade because it hasn't got any buttons or buttonholes down the front.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it's not, you can't close it?
No.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Which I totally appreciate. You know, you finish your garment and then it's like such a faff to go to the go to the buttonhole machine.
Yeah,
and it's got sort of flouncy. Yeah, I do love a good shoulder. It's got a big flouncy shoulder.
Yeah.
Nice wide sleeve. Yeah, again, proportionally, I think it's very pleasing. Yeah, I definitely bought that as a print reference for, I think that was Martine Sipon again.
Can you tell me about, you've been designing prints and patterns along the way. Tell me about how you approach.
Sort of. I mean, I don't really know much about print. I just because I get really bored doing repeats.
Right. Yeah.
And that's basically what, So I get the artwork to a certain point and then I kind of get bored with it because my brain can't function to get the repeat on the go. And placement prints, that's what I like to do, placement prints.
Yes.
Yeah, because then you're working with the actual garment. The garment dictates how you work this design.
Yeah.
Yeah, that interests me much more.
I was looking at the amazing collaboration you did with Marc Jacobs. It's a really, really amazing collaboration. How did that come about? What was the kind of journey to that?
It was really good fun. Well, I'd originally been commissioned by Marc Jacobs when he was working for Louis Vuitton.
Okay.
And that was around 2002. So I met him then and did this collaboration for the patchwork bags, as it was then, sort of fairy tale bags and belt buckles and purses. And then in 2016, he was wanted to revisit that aesthetic.
Okay.
And so I think they were chewing over who to ask. And then Katie Grand, who was styling the show, said, well, why don't you just go back and ask, revisit with Julie again? So I was like, oh, eternally grateful.
Yes, that's nice.
Yeah. So then it was revisiting the sort of old collaboration, but much more popish, I suppose.
What was the time lapse between the two?
15 years or something.
Oh, it's quite a long time.
15, 16, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so much so that I remember the first time we collaborated, it was all through fax machine.
Wow. I'd like to ask you a bit about your fashion brand. Is it Gibo?
Yeah.
Can you tell me a bit about what that was like to run and how that came about and
it was quite random, really. So Gibo is a big Italian manufacturing house that produces high-end fashion for lots of designer labels. And at that period in the early 2000s, they were looking to start their own brand. So it had, as their own brand, it had obviously no history. So it was a total blank slate. So that was really great. Mm. And then, so my friend Bettina, who I was working with at Martine Sipon, she recommended me for the role because Franco Penne, the director, he was after somebody who did print and colour.
Okay.
So Bettina thought
I came to the right place.
Little did he know. dark and depressive. So it was great. So it lasted for 4 seasons.
Okay.
It was really quick. So straight
and
in.
Did the brand continue without you, or when you left, did it fold?
Oh, I got fired.
Okay.
Which, so I was obviously gutted at the time, but now I'm quite proud. it continued for one or two seasons after.
Okay.
Yeah, but it was great because
couldn't manage without you.
No, exactly. But it moved really fast. It was like showing in London Fashion Week, and then they opened two boutiques, one in London and one in Milan. It was really great. It was all produced in Florence.
Oh, amazing. So were you living in the UK at that point, or did you relocate to Italy?
It was like an absolute dream job. I was still based here, but I'd go, I can't remember how often it was, every 3 weeks for fittings.
Okay.
And such like in Florence.
Did you get to do whatever you wanted, or was it?
Yeah, I did for the first two seasons, and then obviously it wasn't selling as they anticipated. And it started to become something else.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but it was a really good lesson on commercial selling, trying to sell clothes and how hellish it is.
yeah, I bet it is.
Yeah, no, it's really fascinating.
I want to ask you what you're excited about making at the moment. What's like what's the thing that's getting your attention?
You know, I love video. Video's my fave at the moment. And books. I think that's the future.
You recently made a book?
It's coming out any minute.
Oh, great. And then, Tell me about it.
So it's a collaborative book with fellow artist Alan Folds, who's based in Scotland.
Uh-huh.
We were sort of matchmaked during COVID. And Alan works with an artist collective where they're neurodiverse and neurotypical.
Okay.
So Laura Aldridge, who also works there or with them, she suggested that we meet online. So it's a very long story. And because she thought Alan and I shared similar likes and dislikes. Yeah, and we do.
Nice.
And Alan's big on drawing and sort of horror and fashion and pop music. Yeah.
So is the book kind of drawings from each of you or archival things, or is it all new stuff? Have you collaborated?
Yeah, we've collaborated. It's a mixed bag of... Alan gave me his sketchbooks, which are like full of drawings. And so I responded to those with drawings and collages. And then we meet every week on Zoom and we draw together.
Nice.
And so it's a lot of... And then I went and we did a photo shoot together where we made props and dressed up. And Annie Colling did the photography.
Oh, I love her photography.
Yeah, she's fabulous.
She's great.
And so the book is... Yeah, it's just full-on sort of riot of visuals.
So
that's been really good fun.
It. There's a couple of questions that I've been asking every guest, which is there a pattern that got away or a dream pattern that you covet?
There is, and I've just realised I've left it at home.
Oh! That's right.
It's got away again!
It's escaped. Oh, it's here. It's just hiding.
Yeah, here it is.
I've fully gasped. Okay, it's tabard-esque.
It's another tabard-esque. And it was so buried on my rail that I wish I'd found it earlier.
Great.
Yeah, it's an all-time fave. So it's got an embroidered sort of bib with cider and apples and jam.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, actually, I realise now that my frieze outfit was hugely inspired by this. And then it's got... Well, basically a combination of 3-4 prints and embroidery, more kitchen.
Yeah, it's sort of
jars,
greengrocers, shelves almost, or sort of all the things you might find in an old fashioned shop, food shop.
It's even got a teeny weeny little ladybird.
Did it come with that? That's
yes.
Not, that's not
yeah.
been added. Oh, cute!
No.
And, that's amazing. Where is it from?
Oh, God. Again, it would have... I don't remember, which is shameful. But it would have been... Might have been blackout again.
Uh-huh. Oh, it's really good.
Yeah, it's good.
Do you think it might be a homemade one again?
Yeah, it looks like it is.
Yeah.
It's funny because... So I've probably had it about 20 years. And when I first started wearing it, I felt very silly. Mm. And now it feels very normal.
Yeah. I think that's there's an amazing ability for the more exposure a thing has, you sort of end up, it becomes very normal to you, and then what other people think, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't feel, yeah, I think there's something quite beautiful about that journey that you can go on with something when you put it on first and it feels so loud.
Yeah, I just felt like I was in panto, and now I'm always in panto. Yeah. And maybe I just have to, I've accepted that that's it.
The panto is the way to go. Nice. And which of these patterns, or any pattern, would you save from a house fire? What's the best one?
Yeah, that makes me really shudder. And
sorry to introduce the idea. Okay. I'm not going to make any fires. You don't really have to decide.
Well, I'm not sentimental, so I would actually, I'd be quite happy that you've done me a favour. So I'm rid of everything.
Okay.
Start again.
Okay. Oh, nice. Then you're allowed back in the vintage shops.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I'd be happy to say goodbye to everything. That's okay.
Mm. It's a cleansing process.
Yeah, I really need help. I need help.
Well, I think I would be coming in to save some stuff, actually, from your fire.
Okay, well, good. That's good to know.
It's been so nice to talk to you, Julie.
Hello, you
Thank
too.
You for sharing your patterns with us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Pattern Portraits with me, Lauren Godfrey. Follow us on Instagram at Pattern Portraits Podcast. The limited edition print accompanying this episode is available to buy now on laurengodfrey.co.uk. Join us next week for another chat about pattern.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.